Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Joining me on the podcast, podcast favorite, Big V. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Sun's out, getting more time outside. It's looking good. Stress-free NBA playoffs.
Yeah, stress-free because, you know, unfortunately, we're out, man.
Yeah, unfortunately. But yeah, I know we're going to get more into that. Other than that, you know, club season for soccer is done, but Euro's coming up. We're going to get into that too. I see you rocking that France jersey. I should have worn my Dutch jersey if I knew.
You should have, man. Yeah, there's still time to change. Yeah, let's get the Raptors stuff out of the way because there's obviously nothing happening with the Raptors. Like, I was like, really, just to double check, I was like, all right, I'm going to go on Reddit. There's a function on Reddit where you can just like look up like the top items for the last week. And it's like a nice way to, like, you know, if you're going to do a weekly show, just go through that. See what you missed, because everything will end up on Raptors Reddit anyway eventually, and nothing. Absolutely nothing. There's like the 15 out of the top 20 are probably Kawhi posts, which, yeah, you know, listen, it's 2019 was cool, was very, very cool experience of a lifetime, but yeah, there's not a lot going on right now in 2021, especially with the Raptors out. You know, in terms of actual news items, you got Masai, who is you know, in Africa right now attending the new league there, and honestly shaking hands with some very, very highly ranked politicians. So, you know, this is honestly just Masai's hobby, is just doing this.
Bigger than basketball.
Yeah, it's anyway, so we'll see. I mean, hopefully he signs. Obviously, I didn't think he was going to sign before he left for the trip. I know he came back to Toronto to do the press conference, which was great, but hopefully there's a decision with Masai soon. The draft is not that far away. Like, it's like, you know, about a month and a half, 2 months. But, you know, in the meantime, though, I hope, you know, the Raptors are preparing and everything like that. I'm sure there are. In terms of actual Raptors stuff, the only thing I really wanted to talk Raptors and specifically was sort of looking at the Eastern Conference and sort of assessing sort of where the Raptors rank right now. So, obviously, if the Raptors were healthy, would have been a different situation this season. And if the Raptors were in Toronto, it'd be a different situation. And so having seen what you've seen from the playoffs in the East so far, which tier would you put a healthy Raptors team in? Because I think you're seeing some truths about some teams that, you know, like Miami, for example, that were very, very evident throughout the season, but they were still overhyped. And, you know, they might be big frauds. So
I think I would put a healthy Raptors team around that Atlanta Hawks tier. Like, I think they're better than the Knicks, because you see the way the Knicks are struggling for offense, and like Randall's first playoff appearance, RJ Barrett's first playoff appearance, and they're just struggling to create, and they obviously don't have a true point guard. So I would put the Raptors above the Knicks, but I feel like if they were healthy and played the Hawks, like, I feel like that would be a really interesting series.
It would be. Well, I mean, you know, I think there's things that the Raptors could do against Atlanta that, you know, like, for example, Atlanta doesn't really have like a scoring post player in that kind of way. Like, you know, obviously Pascal, I think he could probably do a lot of damage in that series.
Trae Young wouldn't be doing what he's doing, right? Like, when you talk about putting Fred VanVleet on him, like, he's going to be working a lot harder.
Well, I mean, you just know. First off, when you watch all these teams right now, like, when all these teams get killed by one superstar, like, I'm just imagining Nick Nurse laughing at the TV, because there's no way he would let this happen. Like, I mean, I've seen Trae Young have big games against the Raptors, so I'm not even saying that this is not possible. I'm just saying that the Raptors would definitely do everything they can to take the ball out of his hands and then live with, like, getting beat by DeAndre Hunter or Kevin Huerter or all these other guys, which you might still get beat anyway, because I feel like Atlanta has pretty good depth, but...
Bogdanovich has been incredible,
bro.
Like, every time you watch them, it's like, if the Bucks didn't blow that sign and trade,
oh my god!
Like, I'd be pretty confident about the Bucks' chances against the Nets if they had Bogdanovich.
Yeah. I'm almost there. Honestly, I might almost be there anyway with the Bucks, and we'll talk about that in a bit too. But yeah, Bogdanovich has been like ridiculously good. I think since, if you go from just the end of April, because every single time I watch a Hawks game, like, he's been on incredible since the end of April. April 1st to, or the start of April to the end of the regular season on May 13th, he averaged 22 points per game, 4 assists, 4 rebounds, shot 50% from 3 on 9 attempts per game, and shot 50% from 2 as well. So this guy was ridiculous. And of course, so far he's honestly cooled off just a little bit, but like, he's still the guy who's making a ton of big shots. I think defensively he's been pretty impressive there too. And to be honest, I think Atlanta defensively as a whole, I just didn't see them being this good defensively. But like, I think Clint Capella should really get more love. Like, he might be, like, obviously Embiid's the best center in the East, but like, past that, I don't know, man. Like, am I missing something?
Yeah, I mean, I had Capella on my fake, like, all NBA third team.
Whoa.
I think he's been
that
good for the Hawks. Also partially because, like, in my first team, I put both Embiid and Jokic. So they opened up like a center spot.
All right.
But yeah, I think Capella's been that good. I think his rim protection is elite. Like, he's definitely in the conversation with like Gobert and Embiid when it comes to that rim protection. And yeah, they can't keep him off the glass, and he's pretty mobile as well, right? That was one of the things I found weird about the Rockets moving on from Capella, because like, yeah, I get the Warriors played him off the court, but that's like, they were so zoned in on just like, how do we beat the Warriors, that like losing him took them away from being able to beat the other teams. It's like, okay, you got to get to the Warriors too.
Yeah. And I also didn't really like the idea of like, okay, so because Westbrook can't shoot, we can't have two non-shooters, so we're going to have to move Capella because we have Westbrook. And it's like, well, you end up having Westbrook for a year. And then, yeah, it didn't really work out great for you guys. Yeah,
Capella's Westbrook, historically, like, he's actually operated better when he has, like, that legit rim threat, that lob threat, right? Yeah. And so taking that away, I think, hurt him as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing I always appreciate about playoff basketball just a little bit, is, like, I think the ability to score at the rim is just so important. And I think it gets more magnified, especially when teams like lock in more with the rotations. I think just like open threes are just harder to come by, unless you play like, quite honestly, unless you play in the West, because every time I watch a West game outside of the Lakers and the Suns, who are playing good defense, but outside of that, the other three series is just like wide open looks all the time. I'm slightly annoyed, honestly. But no, especially when you look in the East, like, the physicality level is really high. It's really hard to get these open threes. And again, just guys who can score at the rim or make an impact at the rim is so valuable. And Capella, obviously a guy who's just doing lobs and rebounding. But like, again, it's been amazing to watch the Hawks dismantle the Knicks like this. Honestly, though, the Knicks collapsing, they're kind of a big fraud. Miami's kind of a big fraud. What did you make of the Bucks-Miami series? Like, do you think that it's really just Milwaukee's that good? Or do you think that Miami, especially outside of the bubble, like, I saw people saying that Jimmy Butler, Stanley Johnson with a coffee shop. Like, is that true?
You know, I will say that Jimmy probably deserves more criticism than he's gotten.
Absolutely.
And, like, he's gotten a pass just because of, like, he does talk a good game, and he's obviously one of the hardest workers in the league, waking up at 2 a.m. to start his day. But yeah, I do think he deserves more criticism. He's kind of rejected that 3-point shot, and you've seen how that's hurt him in this series. It didn't hurt him last year because the Bucks are frauds. And I think the way the Bucks have changed now, like, they're using Brook Lopez more on the interior. He's gone back to being like that post up guy that can get you buckets inside. Drew Holiday is obviously a crazy upgrade over Eric Bledsoe. So I think that series just functionally played out differently, and the Heat couldn't cope. And yeah, you look at, you know, obviously Duncan Robinson had a few stretches, but I think one of the biggest things that we forget about with Miami last year is they had two key pieces of their rotation, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro, in the playoffs, not having to worry about, you know, real playoff atmospheres as rookies.
Right. Yep.
And they never had to face that. And so I think that gave them an advantage. And then we saw a little bit that, you know, this year things were very different.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot of effort to, or it takes a lot of composure to win at Pfizer Forum, obviously. Which, by the way, Bucks fans are like really following Tyler Herro's dad around, going into bathrooms and whatnot, which is quite odd. If you've seen that video, it's odd on multiple levels. But yeah, in terms of this series, like, I just think that, like, look, Miami had problems all year. They kind of got hotter towards the end of the season, and I think Jimmy honestly was like sensational in the regular season. But I just think that in this series, it felt like, I don't know. I mean, I think Milwaukee upgraded the roster, but I just think that there were some real flaws in Miami's game that, like, you saw some limitations. Like, I think the fact that Jimmy can't shoot is really just a huge problem. Like, if you have the physicality, if you play drop defense, if you keep a guy at the rim who, you know, I mean, honestly, Brook Lopez has looked like a defensive liability sometimes in the playoffs. Even honestly, last year when they played this very same Heat team. But this time around, I thought Brook was ridiculously good defensively, especially because, like, it seemed like Bam and Jimmy, these guys just wouldn't drive into the paint. And yeah, the jumpers just weren't there. Like, Jimmy didn't trust the jumper. He couldn't hit the jumper. I mean, he shot 29% from the field in this series and 26% from three. Like, that's awful for 14 points a game. And then Bam was very disappointing as well. And Bam's also a guy who's like, I thought this season, because Jimmy was out, because the Heat had obviously multiple absences, as every team has this season, and thought Bam stepped up for a little bit there, expanded his scoring skill set, got into the mid-range, you know, was hitting a lot of shots from that mid-range, even the long two area. But that also dried up for him to the point where he just wasn't even willing to take those shots. And so it was weird to see Miami so shook. You know what I mean? And and then, yeah, the rest of the roster is just mad old. I don't know, man. The Heat just don't look that great. Like, I'm not really sure what they're going to do in the offseason, but they've really lost a lot of shine from last year.
It was a bad sign that game one, right? The fact that Milwaukee shot 5 of 31 from three, struggled at the free throw line, and still found a way to win. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe if Miami pulls out that game, like, the vibes feel different and Milwaukee feels that pressure all over again and things play out at least a bit more closely than they did. But that game one was a bad sign. If you couldn't come away with that game, it was going to be trouble. And then, obviously, Milwaukee's shooting regressed back to the mean, and it was pretty much a wrap from there.
Yeah. No, Milwaukee's scary. And we'll talk about Bucks Nets in a bit. But I think in terms of tiers, so you know, I think Philly has done enough to be in that top tier along with Milwaukee and with Brooklyn. Like, I think that's pretty clear based on what's happened this season. Obviously, Philly lost the game yesterday, maybe lost and beat for a little bit, which is huge. But I mean, obviously, a fully healthy Sixers team is very good. That next tier, who would you have in that next tier? Because that next tier could be like six teams, could be like three teams. You know what I mean? Because the East does have like a weird talent kind of thing. Like, it really is. Obviously, in the regular season, there are three teams that kind of distinguish themselves. But Knicks, Hawks, Heat, Celtics, Wizards, Pacers, Hornets, Raptors. Like, do you see that all as one morass, or do you see one team in that group maybe distinguishing itself, sort of being like a tier B?
If I had to pick one based on what we've seen, and obviously, like, it's hard to say much about what the Raptors will be next season because there's so much in flux in terms of the decisions they have to make. If I had to pick one based on what we've seen, I'd probably say the Hawks. Like, I think they've been really solid. Like, I think to me, they're clearly above the Knicks. I think they would have beat the Heat. The Celtics would have been interesting if Jaylen Brown was healthy. I think the fact that they were able to get a game off the Nets without him, like Marcus Smart, like people will love him, people will hate him, but like he's the heart and soul of that team. And you see how much of an influence he has in their compete level. Like even that last game, like they weren't really in it. And obviously, like you had Durant, Kyrie, and Harden combining for over 100 points. Like you're not going to compete with them on those nights, but they never really gave in. Right. And I think that comes down to Marcus Smart. I think the Celtics, Hawks, Raptors fully healthy, like that would have all been interesting to see. I think the Raptors would have given the Bucks a better run for their money than the Heat. So, I think it's unfortunate the way things played out in Tampa. But, at the end of the day, I think they'll be happy with the time off.
Yeah.
Playing for what?
Playing for what, honestly? No, and it's honestly, like, which playing team has looked that great? I mean, the Lakers were a playing team, technically.
Yeah.
Even the Grizzlies, like, obviously they took game one, but, like, they can't get any stops.
That was without Donovan Mitchell, too, right? So
exactly. No Donovan Mitchell. And I don't want to take anything away from that Grizzlies team. Like, I think they're, like, really impressive. Like, a lot of guys are stepping up for them. Like, Kyle Anderson and Dylan Brooks have been awesome, like, as a group. It's just not enough. And they just don't play cohesively defensively. They don't really have, like, a guy in the middle who can solidify your defense like that. And, like, as much as I love JB, like, every single time I'm watching this game, I'm like, all right, so they're going to run pick and roll at him, and he's going to just get scored on or commit a foul. And it's like, you know, it's tough. It's tough watching some of these clubs. But, I agree with you. I think Atlanta, just with their young age as well, like, I think there's just a lot of guys there who are on the rise together, obviously Trae Young being the leader of that group. And Boston as well. Like, you really can't deny what Tatum's been doing. I know we would like to slander Tatum, but, like, it's kind of ridiculous the way he's scoring. I think he's Nets
are a legit superstar.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in a game against Kyrie, James Harden, and KD, Jason Tatum looked better than all three of those guys in game three. Now, I'm not saying that that's, you know, what the level he's at consistently, but he's literally put up 90 points in the last two games. And you might say, well, this is an indicative of a problem. Like, the Nets don't really have great wing defenders, and that could really stunt them going forward. They don't have a lot of rim protection. They don't really play defense that hard, quite honestly. But, I mean, it's absurd the way Tatum's been moving, the way he's been attacking. And, I don't even need to tell Raptor fans this. Like, we saw this last year, right? Like, you know, Tatum was the guy who hurt the Raptors, like, by far the most. The only thing with the Celtics that I'm a little concerned, I mean, not a little concerned, majorly concerned, is, like, I don't really feel like they have any depth at all, right? Like, so Tatum and Brown, I believe in, absolutely. Smart, he's good enough that he's okay, although he would ideally be, like, a fourth option. Do you know what I mean? And then, I mean, Kemba has just been just, I just don't trust that man whatsoever. He has not been good in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I mean, just looking to the future, like, I really like Robert Williams. Like,
yeah,
obviously he's hurt, but I think, you know, he's the type of big that, like, fits into, like, the way the game is played today. Like, his rim protection is really good. His dive threat is really good. Obviously, in terms of, like, defensive maturity and understanding positional defense and that type of stuff, like, he's got to improve. But I like him as, like, a future core piece.
Yeah, I think, honestly, out of all the young guys, like, he's probably the best one out of that group. Although that mostly just speaks to, like, how poor the rest of the young guys are. Like, do you, like, I mean, I know Peyton Pritchard hurt the Raptors a few times, but, like, it's just a very uninspiring group from a team that had a lot of picks. And, like, I don't think Evan Fournier is really a guy that's making that much of an impact. Certainly not a guy you would trust to go into playoffs with. Maybe as a bench guy, maybe, but not, even still, he's just not very inspiring. And then, yeah, Kemba is just making so much money. And, you know, the flexibility of this team is not that great, to be honest. They still, I mean, unless they can convert Robert Williams into, like, a full-time starter, which I think a lot of people are probably arguing for anyway, considering he shoots 70% from the field. as a lob dunker, and obviously he can post crazy block stats, but he still feels like a guy that you don't feel 100% secure because of his decision making. So yeah, I mean, you know, once you get past that first group, like the second group is a little shaky, and you know, I think the Raptors are at the bottom of that third group. And this is not really just me being a homer. Like, I really do think that like a healthy Raptors, if they re-sign Kyle, if they re-sign Kem, if they re-sign Gary Trent, would be at the bottom of that group. And I really don't like, and I know you might say that's a little wild because the Raptors finished 18 games under 500. Like, I do think so much of that was circumstance. And in terms of quality, like, I don't, you know, the one thing the Raptors don't have is that like Trae Young star level quality. They don't really have that Tatum star level quality. But I think they have way more depth. Like, I there's seven guys in the Raptors I would trust. Whereas in Atlanta, there's like, well, actually, Atlanta has good depth too. That's probably why they're the top of this sort of B tier. And then Boston has zero depth, like beyond three guys.
Yeah.
You know, so. And then the rest of the conference is just not good. Like, Miami is so old at this point. Like, it's.
See, the thing with Miami is that can change pretty quickly in the offseason, right? Depending, like. The outlook, you look at them differently if they get Kyle Lowry, right?
I do, but like, are they going to get Kyle though? Are you worried that Miami flaming out like this is going to prompt them to go after Kyle?
I mean, I do think they will go after him. I think if the Clippers, you know, we still got to see if they beat the Mavericks. If the Clippers flame out, I see them going after Kawhi. One of those two names I think would again, you know, put Miami back up into that mix, at least that, you know, that second tier mix. And so, yeah, I think we got to see how that stuff plays out in the offseason. But right now, where each team is, I think you have it right, where, you know, it's Atlanta, Boston, and then probably Toronto if they were healthy.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't really see anyone else from the bottom groups jumping up. There's just not a lot of potential with, like, the Pacers, for example. They were very uninspiring. The Hornets looked super, super young. I mean, in the regular season, when you can play up-tempo, guys are dunking, it's great. In a playoff setting, you know, I don't really trust the decision making. Like, even LaMelo Ball, we only saw him play that one playing game, and I don't think anyone saw it because it was like a 30-point slap by the Indiana Pacers. I don't know if people were clearing their rosters or – they're scheduled to watch Hornets Pacers, but, you know.
Someone save Miles Turner.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. I mean, listen, you know, I feel like I like a lot of players on the Hornets, just all of them together at the same place. Just doesn't scream playoff team to me. The Wizards are clearly just not a very good team. Westbrook has real issues when it comes to the playoffs. That's sort of when teams can really guard him.
Do you think anything happens with Beal this summer?
I still don't think so. I think Beal really likes being a big dog in a small pond. Like, when you see him like complaining this much about like the scoring title and things like this, like, I don't know. I feel like he's just comfortable. And I think Westbrook actually was a real big help for him. So I think they probably bought himself another year, which is pretty wild to say. Like, he just doesn't seem as serious to me. And then, you know, Chicago, you know, I don't know, to be honest, the Bulls are just always trash. So like, it's not even like us trying to gas the Raptors so much as like the rest of the East is kind of bad. But
just quickly, if Jaylen Brown is healthy,
yeah,
who wins a series between the Celtics and the Hawks?
That's a good question. So the one thing that the Knicks haven't been able to exploit with the Hawks is that I don't feel like the Hawks have that great wing defense. Now they have DeAndre Hunter, who I think is really good. Young guy, you know.
And they're missing Cam Reddish.
Cam Reddish, but realistically, Cam Reddish is not stopping either Tatum or Brown. It's not a guy you trust for like to play 30 minutes at the moment. Even though he did show good flashes, but yeah, I just think they're one wing defender short on that front. So like the Knicks, for example, they can't really get at Gallinari. But to be honest, them not getting at Gallinari is hilarious. Gallinari is playing like he's one of the most unathletic players. It's actually incredible to watch.
Yeah.
But it's because Randle obviously has been struggling so much that like Gallinari is able to use his strength, just play back and sort of absorb a lot of hits. This is a really good question. I think the series goes seven. I think the Hawks have better forwards in terms of, or like better centers in terms of just like a better front court.
Yeah.
And they have a distinct advantage at point guard. Although I do think that if you put Smart on Trae Young, he's not going to dance around on the way he's doing right now against the the thing is, yeah, they just have no depth, right? So like if over the course of the series you lose one guy, like I just feel like Boston is just so short. So I think I might still go with Atlanta. What about you?
I think I'm going Celtics because of the experience factor. I think the Knicks inexperience has played into this a little bit. I think that battle at the point guard, and it's like I'm surprised with how relatively little physical pressure the Knicks have put on Trae Young. Yeah. I thought they'd really try and rough him up, especially for Tom Thibodeau team. I thought they'd do more of that, especially, you know, and then even on the offensive end, like, I don't think they've hunted him as much as they should or
could.
But
they can't really, though. That's the thing. They don't have that many great wing creators. They don't have any great wing creators, unfortunately. Like, Derrick Rose is doing his best, but, I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, so the Hawks have been hiding Young on Reggie Bullock.
Yeah.
But I think there's got to be ways to, like, just get switches and just target it a bit more. Obviously, it's not something you can do all the time, but I think they've done it less than I thought they would have.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I think that's something the Celtics would be smarter about. Like, even in the Raptors series, we saw it, right? Like, once they've kind of figured out the Raptors defense and Nick Nurse's schemes, like they did get shots that they wanted. There were a lot of missed shots. I mean, I think that comes down to the talent level that we talked about and the lack of depth.
Yeah.
But I think they did get plenty of good looks. And I think we did complain a lot about, you know, those corner threes that, you know, the Raptors usually feel comfortable contesting in the regular season. It really bit them in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it also helped that Marcus Smart turned into Ray Allen for a few minutes there. I don't know. That series is tough. But I mean, I'm happy it went seven because it was a great series. Honestly, one of the series of the entire playoffs. But
yeah,
it hurts to look back on. Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. And I think that probably will be a future matchup that we'll see because I don't really see Boston with the depth that they have being atop of the East. Right. So you might see that as a 4-5 matchup, like as soon as next season. I was going to ask to the Kyle Lowry point about the Heat. There's been some conversation about, you know, obviously, I think Raptor fans, we're trying our very best to sort of chime in and gloat. You know, I just, for me personally, it doesn't really resonate with me in terms of like, as a great bit of banter that like, you know, this team should have traded for Kyle Lowry. Like, you know, it just feels a little weird. Like, you should have taken my wife. And it's like, well, this is a little strange. In any case, though, like with Kyle, which teams out of the three that were interested? I mean, well, four, I guess the Clippers, but I didn't really think the Clippers had anything to offer. Out of the three teams that were interested in Kyle, Lakers, Heat, Sixers, which team could have really used Kyle Lowry to make a difference, in a tangible difference? I think for me, the Lakers, you know, it would have been Schroeder, KCP, and THT. To be honest, I don't even know if the Raptors would have said yes to that. That doesn't seem like a very good package. But to me, the Lakers could have tangibly used Kyle, and more than just the Heat and the Sixers to me. But let me hear your take on this. Which team could have used Kyle the most?
I think I'm with you on the Lakers. I mean, especially when you look at that Chris Paul matchup, that would have been so much fun to watch.
Just, oh my God.
Kyle and CP just trying to pull out every trick in the book. The refs just
just pure shithousery.
Yeah.
That's the only word for it. It's just shithousery.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that would have been incredible to watch. So I think the Lakers one would have been the best. I think it would have been interesting, at least more interesting to watch Lowry on the Heat than the Sixers in the series against the Bucks.
What would it have made a difference though? Like, what
ultimately, I think the Bucks still win.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
so that's why I still say that the Lakers that would have been the most interesting one. Mm-hmm. I will throw in a wild card because this team wasn't involved in any trade talks, but they're gonna have cap space. And I think a team like Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
You put Kyle Lowry next to Luka Doncic. Mm-hmm. I mean, even that game three start that they got out to, right?
Yeah.
I think someone like Kyle Lowry, he manages those non-Luka minutes way better. And he's sort of, you know, keeps the ship afloat. And they probably pull out that game and then the series is over. But I think that would be a very interesting team for Kyle to consider.
I was going to make a joke about the way Dallas acquires players, but that feels a little unfair in this case. I just see Dallas, like, I think they have bigger ambitions. But I mean, they could absolutely use Kyle. Like, I think Luka clearly needs a number two. Like, you know, I think Tim Hardaway Jr. has played great in certain spurts. He's cooled off. Kristaps is just
not good.
He's honestly like giving off huge Bargnani vibes. It's actually amazing. The thing is, he's like way more suited to playing modern basketball, right? Like he's bigger first off, and he's quicker. But like he just like stands around. He's just like kind of, he's very stiff. And then like when guys like if he has a mismatch, all he does is just shoot the jumper over the guy, which is like, yeah, yes, you can get the shot because you're like a foot taller than him. But like you're not good at making these mid range shots. I don't know. Kristaps,
it's like someone has to constantly remind him that he's 7'3".
Yeah. Well, again, this is the conversation we had with Bargnani. It's actually kind of amazing, to be honest. Like that Kristaps trade with New York. Like it turns out the prize of that trade was Tim Hardaway Jr., which and he was a throw-in. He was a contract throw-in. But you know, seriously though, the roster is just not very good. And this is a trend that you see across the league. Like there's just not a lot of depth in a lot of these teams. Like the Mavericks don't have a lot of tangible depth. Like a lot of guys can play because Luka is a system unto himself. So you can plug in pieces, it's not as big of a deal. But like when it comes to a playoff setting, when guys sort of zero in on a guy, if Luka gets a small injury like he's having right now with his neck, then yeah, you really see that there's no more creation on that roster. I agree with you, Kyle would have definitely impacted there, but like, you know, the Sixers, for example, it's a little too early to, you know, rate that one, but I thought the best fit for Kyle would have been with Philly. Obviously, like the beyond the hometown connection itself, but the trade itself would have been Danny Scott, what's his name? Mike Scott, Raptor Killer, obviously. Tyrese Maxey, and then two firsts. That was, I think, reportedly what the deal was going to be. As a Raptor fan, that would have been a trade that interested me. If only so that Danny can finally get his ring. It's been 2+ years now. And with Kyle, like, I think he would have fit that team so well. I mean, obviously, they have obviously more than enough to beat the Wizards.
Yeah.
Even with the Wizards taking one game. But I don't know. This is where if you really were serious about the championship, like the Sixers are going to play, assuming Embiid is healthy, they're going to crush whichever one is going to come out between the Heat or the Knicks or the Hawks or the Knicks. Like they're just going to beat that team. They're going to walk to the conference finals. I'm
curious to see how the Hawks go against Philly.
Come on, man. The size, the size is going to just absolutely. I mean, I think even with the Knicks, they have size, but it's a different level of size when you're talking about like post play. Like I don't think Capella can guard nearly as well in the post as he can as a help defender.
Right. But I'm just curious. I feel like they could potentially get a couple games.
Yeah. I mean, they can. I think if Philly...
Philly just fell flat without Embiid. I mean, who knows? Maybe he misses game one of that series. Maybe he misses a couple games in that series. Who knows?
All right. Well, I'm saying a healthy Philly would easily handle Atlanta, in my opinion. But yeah. I mean, like, you know, if you're a team that's going to guarantee basically to walk to the conference finals, and at that point, it's really about how much top 10 talent you have. Like, and you really look back at this run, you're like, wow, we went to the conference finals, but for some reason, we didn't trade for Kyle Lowry. And we have, you know, Danny Green and Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real missed opportunity. But
yeah. I don't know. Yeah. No, I agree. Like, Sixers, Hawks, the most likely outcome would probably be like a gentleman's sweep. Like,
yeah. With Embiid healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just think watching more and more like the Hawks offensive talent and Bogdanovich again, like he has that playoff swag. And like, you see, like Giannis said he wanted him because of what he saw in like the international play, right? Like the fact that he just loved those moments and you're seeing that again, here. So I think he would have been a factor in the series as well. In terms of the trade, this trade, I think this is something that the Sixers will miss, but it seemed like the Raptors wanted Danny and Thibault. So that's where I was kind of like, from the Sixers' perspective, if you're losing Danny and Thibault, like you're gonna go into a series against the Nets with nothing.
Yeah. I was a little surprised that there were that insistent on Thibault. I mean, if that was, you know, reportedly true, like, yeah. I think I like Thibault, but I also do think that, like, situationally, he's in the perfect spot. Like, first off, everyone on Philly in the perimeter can play extra aggressive because they have Embiid. Like, just it's a level of protection that you can't really replicate almost anywhere else, maybe with Utah, but you don't even see a Utah's perimeter defenders that aggressive. They play conservative mostly. The Sixers really capitalize on, which is smart. That's exactly the strategy. But I do wonder if you don't have that line of protection behind them, like how much I think Thibault and Simmons would still be sensational defenders. So would Danny, but like there's a drop off, and then offensively he's a minus.
Yeah. So for the Sixers, like if they were just giving up the one wing, whether it be Danny or Thibault, then I would do it. But to lose both, then I don't know how much that changes their like championship aspiration. Yeah.
I think that was the issue with the Laker trade too. Is just like you were just taking too many pieces off that roster. The thing is, the Lakers didn't have as much depth either, right? So if you're gonna take Schroeder and KCP off that team, and Kyle is obviously way better than both those guys, but
and THT,
and THT. Well, they haven't even played THT, which is a little strange. I feel like he could play, in this series, but in any case, they're just not playing him.
He's been solid for them down the stretch of the regular season. It's weird.
I don't know what to expect from that guy. Like sometimes he's like really operating pick and rolls well, and you're like, wow, look at the size. He can drive to the rim. He can shoot. And then other times he just struggles as a supporting player. So I could see why he doesn't play.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like, if you don't have the ball in your hands, like, can you still be effective? And it doesn't seem as much. So,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting. To be honest, I think honestly at this point, you know, we'll see what happens in the offseason, but I'm starting to come around to the idea that, like, look, the Raptors, if they're going to build from the middle and stay competitive, the best use of their money in terms of who's the best player they can get for that money is Kyle Lowry, to me, still. And so even though I felt like, okay, Kyle's probably moving on, it's probably the right choice, you know, the way I'm looking at it now, I'm like, I wouldn't hate it if Kyle's back. I mean, why would you hate if Kyle's back, you know? Where are you with that at this moment?
I kind of lean towards looking at the future.
Okay.
Partially because I want, you know, with Pascal and Fred and OG, I kind of feel like it's time to take the training wheels off. And I feel like Kyle is that guy who just makes everything all right. And I think they need to be able to figure it out now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think his guidance has been great to this point. And so if you go into the off season, the way I look at it is, can you get in free agency something better than what was in the trade packages? And so if you hypothetically get Rashawn Holmes and another capable bench piece, that's, I would argue that's better than, you know, the trade offer that Miami had with, you know, Duncan Robinson as the face of the trade. You know what I mean? I would argue that that's better than what the Lakers offered with THT as the face of the deal. So I look at it that way. And so I kind of lean towards just developing for the future and letting Kyle also, you know, go ahead and chase that championship somewhere else.
Yeah. One thing I've said about Kyle is sort of like, you know, you sign him to a reasonable deal, and then in the future, if you have more assets, you know, you can sort of move them. And I think in that line of thinking, it was just like, I think having reevaluated, that was wrong, because with Kyle, he's at this point where he's talked about it in his season interview, like family and long-term fit is very important to him. He's got kids who are entering school. You don't want to move them between cities and stuff like that, just willy-nilly. And obviously he's very close to his family. He's kept them with him everywhere. So it's not a situation where I think it's honestly almost a little bit disrespectful. I mean, to sign Kyle with the intention of trading him in like a year, to be honest. I think wherever Kyle signs, he's going to want to stay there for 2 years, at least maybe three.
Yeah.
So if Toronto wants to do that for him, then that's fine. But I don't think you can really realistically sign him and then try to trade him. So I think that does kind of cut down on how willing I would be to sign Kyle. But I do think that, like, again, the free agency class is just not very good. You know what I mean? So if you can get Kyle for like 20 mil, that's definitely not bad. Like, you could do a lot worse, but we'll see what happens with Kyle. Obviously there'll be tons of coverage there. I wanted to ask you a few more questions about the playoffs before we go on to Canada basketball. And they had some news this past week with them releasing their 21-man roster for training camp. But three questions about the playoffs before we go. Nets versus Bucks. Which team you got in that series? Because that's going to be an incredible series.
Yeah, that is going to be spectacular. I can't wait. I tweeted before that I have an uncomfortable level of trust in the Bucks.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it kind of played out to show why that is. And so I'm actually going to go ahead and pick the Bucks. I think in terms of the defensive matchups, that's the first thing I look at. How are you going to match up with Kyrie, Harden, and Durant? You have Jrue Holiday for Kyrie. You have, PJ Tucker to go at James Harden. You have Giannis for Durant. And when you look at Giannis's ability to score inside, you know, the Nets are really thin when it comes to protecting the interior. And so I think that's something the Bucks will expose. And Jrue Holiday is that dude, man. Like, I think he's going to be a problem in that series. If I had to pick, I'd pick the Bucks in 7 or maybe even 6.
Yeah, very rarely do you see Kyrie pressed because he's so talented and he's such a magician with the ball.
Yeah.
When he plays Jrue Holiday, I really do feel like he's pressed. Not that he can't score on him. Not that he can't do, like, still get his offense, still get his shots off. But he just looks pressed. Like, he has to work really hard offensively to get that going. And Kyrie's scoring is such a big part of what Brooklyn does because all they do is score. They don't really guard. Like, it's a real issue when I watch. Okay, here's the thing. I'm not judging the Nets based on this first round because who cares? You know, you can walk into the series and you can win the series. It's not a real issue. Like, it doesn't. Cool, Tatum had 50 points. They won a game, whatever. But they're going to win the series. But then again, like, at what point are you supposed to judge the Nets, right? Like, you couldn't judge them all season. You couldn't judge them last season. They weren't really available together, whatever. And then you go in the playoffs and you're just like, all right, so they like to switch everything, which, okay. To be honest, it feels a little bit like lazy switching. It doesn't feel like purposeful switching, whereas, like, you know, the way that the old Rockets teams used to really, really engage in switching. The way, you know, when the Warriors went small, they would go switch. But they were really aggressive. They were really into you. They were really interested in playing defense and using that switching to take advantages in terms of, you know, neutralizing a pick and roll, not allowing the roll man to dive, containing penetration, all that stuff that you get from switching. It just, when the Nets switch, it feels lazy. Like, okay, so KD is going to start the possession on Tatum. And then, you know, they're going to call for a screen from, like, Tristan Thompson. And it's like, okay, let's just give up that switch and let's make Blake Griffin guard Jason Tatum. And it's like, why? Like, it's the playoffs, man. Like, it shows some intensity. Like, I just don't feel like that. And I think a switching defense is not really the answer against a team like Milwaukee. I think with Milwaukee, what you really want to do is pack the paint, send extra bodies, and then rotate out and trust that your rotations are going to come out and neutralize their shooters. Now, they obviously have really good shooters, but I do think their passing is a little bit subpar for a championship-level team. But in any case, they'll put so much pressure on the rim that you do have to double. So all this sort of, like, switching and stuff like that, it's going to be much harder to do that against Milwaukee. And when have you seen possessions where, like, the Nets are, like, super locked in, you know, rotationally? One guy's picking up for the next guy. They're making multiple rotations. They're forcing a team into a 24-second shot clock violation. Have you ever seen the Brooklyn Nets force another team into a 24-second shot clock violation? The way the Raptors used to do, like, in Game 7 against Philly, like, they did that, like, 6 times. Or, like, against Brooklyn or against the Bucks. Like, there's something there. I don't know. I mean, obviously, offensively, they can crush anybody, but I'm kind of with you. I honestly do slightly lean Bucks in this series. As wild as this is, I still, like, feel the most confident in their talent, absolutely. But there's just something about the Nets, man. I don't think they should have traded Jared Allen, actually, in retrospect.
Oh, man.
Like, why did they do that? They just put him in that trade extra, you know what I mean?
But I don't know if the Harden trade happens otherwise, no?
But he wasn't even he wasn't even going to Houston. He was just getting rerouted to, like, Cleveland for and Taurean Prince. I don't know, to be honest.
I'd have to look back on that in terms of the salaries and stuff and see if it adds up without that. But
they just have no size, man. Like, no size.
Yeah. They don't, and so that's the area that the Bucks will have to exploit. I think, you know, why this series is going to be so captivating is because when you look at the offensive trend the last few years, like, this is, like, that ultimate test of, you know, just buying completely into skill ball, right? And you've got three of the five most dynamic offensive talents in the league. And so if they can trump the Bucks defense, I don't see why they wouldn't win the title after that. Because in terms of the matchups, like, you think of what Philly could potentially throw at them. You think about what the Lakers could potentially throw at them. I guess maybe the Clippers would have an argument with Kawhi and PG, but I think matchup wise, the Bucks probably present the biggest defensive threat. And so if they can overcome that, then it would be a huge statement in, hey, this era right now, you buy into the skill. And we've seen like a mini version of that in the Hawks Knicks series, where it's like the skill, the offensive talent is just too much for, you know, a team that was like a top five defense.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is going to be really, really interesting to watch. Who would you say are like the X factors? I think maybe like the easy one for Brooklyn is probably Bruce Brown, just because of the way he like fits in and the way he's been finishing so far and the way he's performed on the season. But who would you pick as an X factor on either side?
Bruce Brown is interesting to me because I felt like he was really effective in the regular season, but in a playoff setting, he's super small. Like, he's just really small. I think you need more size to impact the series. Honestly, I really do think that, like, they're going to need Jeff Green to get healthy. They're going to need Jeff Green to be, like, they're going to need Jeff Green to really be one of the, I don't know, man, like, producing at a starter's level, let's say. Because I do think he's really key to a lot of stuff. He gives them good size. And, of course, if he can hit his threes as well, then he can space the floor too. And then honestly, for the Bucks, it's a weird series to predict, because I do think that like a lot of these guys, it's really going to come down to the stars. So, but I do wonder how Brook Lopez will hang in this series, like, because I think he was super important in beating Miami, but I also think that Miami's guys weren't able to create shots off the, you know, they, I mean, like, Jimmy and Bam weren't shooting jumpers, so it's very easy to play Brook Lopez and have him sag at the rim.
Yeah.
I do wonder how much of that is going to be able to, he's going to be able to do with guys like, you know, James Harden, like KD, like Kyrie Irving. Those guys are going to try to go at Brook Lopez all the time and play him off the floor. Now, this is a series where I do think that like the Bucks can go smaller. And so you could put in like, let's say, you know, Bobby Portis ish, but most likely PG Tucker to be small ball power forward and Giannis at five. And that's not as bad, but yeah, I don't know. To be honest, it's weird. It's a weird series in that I feel like both teams should play the other team's defensive strategy. Like, I think the Nets should really focus on like collapsing the paint and getting out to shooters, and I think the Bucks should really focus on switching, because I think they should go small and switch. I think that's probably the best way to beat Brooklyn.
You know, you mentioned Brown and Lopez as potentially the X factors, like. I wouldn't be surprised if there's possessions where we see the Nets have Brown defending Brook Lopez.
Yeah, and that's true.
What's functionally different from last year to this year is, as opposed to last year, maybe even the year before that, where the Bucks just wanted Brook Lopez to stand outside the three-point line and give that spacing. Like, they're happy for him to get in the post and take advantage of a mismatch and score.
Yeah.
And so... but even with that, like, the Nets might see that as a win. It's like, yeah, well, we're getting the ball out of Giannis's hands. We're getting the ball out of Drew's hands. Like, let him go at, you know, whoever it is on the mismatch inside.
And yeah.
So I think that's going to be interesting. I'll throw Bryn Forbes into the mix. I think the way he's been shooting the ball.
He's been great.
If he can come in and he's got to get more minutes because Dante DiVincenzo was out, right? So I think DiVincenzo would have been an easy pick for X Factor if he was healthy.
Yeah, but I think between the athleticism and stuff like that, he's kind of like their version of Bruce Brown.
Yeah. So I think Bryn Forbes is going to be interesting to watch. I'm not expecting much out of Pat Connaughton, but
no, he's not a serious guy, man. Come on. My favorite story, one of my favorite stories in the NBA is that Pat Connaughton is a construction worker. Like, you really look it up, man. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. This guy throwing bricks on and off the court. remember that Pat Connaughton game against the Raptors this season? He came in to hit like five threes, and Leo was like, "See, I told you about Pat Connaughton." I don't like when Leo does that. It's always about random guys, and he's like, "I told you this guy looked dangerous," and I'm like, "You didn't."
Yeah.
You tell me everyone's dangerous, man. Come on. I mean, it's the NBA. Obviously, everyone's good, but like.
If the dude's played EuroLeague or he's played for Syracuse.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. The way he showed love to with Mike James. Like, Leo's definitely picking Mike James as the X factor in the series.
Yeah. For sure, man. No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, oh, right, I have two more playoff questions. Who's going to win the West at this current moment? So, obviously, everything changes every game, right? Like, the Lakers are looking great. Then AD goes out, and they're now in a 2-2 series. You know, the Clippers were really down bad, and now they're back in, and they look unstoppable. Yeah. I'm just going to ask you right now, who do you see winning the West?
Man, I'm going to say the Lakers. I'm still
going to Still going with the Lakers. What about AD?
I think the fact that he's day to day is huge.
Is he day to day though? It's a groin injury, man. That's
yeah.
It takes a while to get over that. Remember how long Pascal was out for that? And then he, you know, even last year, like he was the player since the groin injury has not been the same.
Yeah. No. I mean, I always get a bit suspect with Lakers injury news, and how much part of that is creating a narrative and.
Wow.
So I think AD will be all right.
Okay.
I think I do think we will get the Lakers Clippers matchup eventually. And so I would pick the Lakers to come out of that. Mm. Just, you know, even though the Clippers are back on track those first two games.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't bode well in terms of my belief in them. So, yeah, I think the Lakers are still coming out the West.
Okay. I would agree with you.
It's too much LeBron, though, man. I can't bet against him.
Yeah, I know. And it's fair. It's not even like it's a bias. Like it's what the evidence has said is don't ever bet against LeBron. It's just not going to work in your favor. By the way, I think the champion is coming out of the East this year, not out of the West. I think the title's returning East. I honestly like a lot more of the East teams than the West teams at the moment because they're mostly all banged up. But, you know, I hate to say this, man. I'm really going to look like a clown. I'm really out here talking, you know, nicely about the Bucks and the Clippers. No, you know what, though? But coming into this, into the playoffs, I really did like the way the Clippers were playing. Obviously, the first two games, plus the first half, the first quarter, I guess, of game three against Dallas was looking real, real shaky. But, I mean, the thing is, it's the same way you can't bet against LeBron. I can't bet against playoff Kawhi, man. Like, look at what Kawhi is doing right now. It's absurd how good he is.
Yeah.
He has no weaknesses anywhere, man. And this guy's a robot. And he's playing 40 minutes and looking like mostly healthy again. So,
no, he's back to playing at that insane level.
Yeah.
And it's cool that, like, he kind of recognized, right? Like, his narrative was kind of on the line a little bit. If they went out in the first round and if they went down 3-0, the way that game three started out, like he had to come through and he did come through. And so now we got a whole new series. Hopefully we get that Clippers Lakers series, man. Cause I think the other thing you look at too, is the way Doncic has been able to sort of pick apart the Clippers defense. Like, just think about what LeBron's going to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. LeBron is very hard to assess right now. It feels like he's two players. There's, like, a very, like, pedestrian version of LeBron. And then, of course, like, playoff LeBron. But playoff LeBron used to be, like, every single game. And now, like, playoff LeBron is, like, half the games.
Yeah. He's.
You know what I mean? And, like, even an average game for LeBron, you can't even tell because it'll be, like, 25, 6, 10 rebounds, 2 steals. And you're like, oh, come on, he played great. And you watch the game and it's like very different, but.
No, he's definitely in that phase of his career where he has to like even load manage in the playoffs.
Yes.
Like initially it was like, okay, I can go hard, you know, for 70 games of the regular season. Then it went down to 60. Then it went down to 50. Then you get the playoff LeBron. Then it's like, okay, you know, we don't need this game as much. Kyrie, you go off. Kevin Love, you go off, that type of thing. Mm. And now it's like, all right, man. When it's an adverse situation,
yeah,
I'll be there.
he's really like a parent. Like, it was like, yo, all right, you guys go figure this out. If you really need me, call me. Which, by the way, actually, I do think LeBron leaving the East has hurt that in the sense, because he didn't have to go full out like super all time, maybe the greatest player of all time, LeBron, all the time in the East. Like, he would have to do that like one or two series, but that's about it. And, you know, listen, the amount of times he load managed against the Raptors. I hate saying this, but it's true. All right. My last question about the playoffs before we move on to Canada and the Canada basketball roster. Champion, West or East? I'm already saying right now the champ's coming out of the East. Who do you have?
I'm with you.
Okay.
I feel about the Bucks the way you do about the Clippers. So.
That's unfortunate, man. This whole podcast is invalid just based on that alone. Let's just move on to Canada basketball, man. I can't believe this is what we're saying 2 years after the title. This is unbelievable, man. I'm disgusted with the state of affairs. We're going to have to literally talk about a different sport soon. So, all right, let's talk about Canada. We'll be doing it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we didn't switch up. This is on brand for us. Okay, so Canada basketball, the men's roster has been released. Training camp, 21 players. I believe 14 of them in the NBA, and a number of them obviously playing overseas. And I didn't know Anthony Bennett was not playing anywhere, because I didn't realize that until I saw that he was listed as unattached in terms of club, which is interesting. It's a way to say single, I guess. He's just emotionally unattached. In any case, though, probably the most talent the Canada basketball has put together on a training camp roster at one time. There are some absences. Like, I think Shea is not on here. He had a plantar fascia injury. So, you know, okay. So he's also up for an extension. So, you know, he's not on the list. Chris Boucher's not on the list.
Yeah. I think the thing that sucks with Shea is when he put out his message, he said that he's out for Canada for the summer.
Yeah.
Like, initially I was hoping, oh, okay, you know, maybe he's just taking extra time. He's skipping the qualifying tournament, but maybe he'll be there for the Olympics. But that message sounds like he's just not going to be available at all.
Yeah. Which, you know, I think there was some hope that, like, okay, so OKC is just holding guys out because they're tanking. But if that's a more serious injury, I hope he's okay, honestly, because he's a very fun player to watch. Boucher's not on this list. That was a little surprising, quite honestly. But he wants to get his knee fully right, and it's, you know, he wants to be good for next season as well. So, okay. He's probably honestly heard enough of Nick Nurse's D-League stories. You know, he's good. He's been in the D-League. He's already been in Mississauga. He's all right. He's heard all the stories about eating at the Tim Hortons beside or going to Shula's Joe's beside the Hershey Center. He doesn't want to hear that. So with this roster that's out, what are some things that stand out to you? Like, is there a notable weakness? Is there a notable strength? What are your thoughts on this 20-man roster that was released for a training camp?
Well, as it is, we got to see when it gets trimmed down to 12, what's available for Canada. But as is, talent is going to be a strength. When you look at who they'll be going up against, Greece will likely be without Giannis. And then they've got China to deal with, and then the other teams.
I'm just going to be here to tell you right now, that's a 40-point slot. I will be on that roster. No, I'm kidding. You won't find my name on there. It'll be my real name. You're not going to see William.
And then you look at some of the other teams, like the Czech Republic. Like, I think Canada will clearly have the best talent in that qualifying tournament, and so I would expect them to come out of it. Like, you look at the Knicks are on the verge of being out, the Grizzlies are on the verge of being out, so you expect, you know, Brandon Clark and Dylan Brooks and RJ Barrett to be available. So I think that's
you know what, I'm not sure Brandon Clark makes the roster.
He might not. There's a chance that happens. If the Mavs go on to lose in the first round, Dwight Powell is available. So I think that gets interesting. Yeah, the bigs, you know, that's the one thing I look at. I'm like, man, you look at Kelly Olynyk, Dwight Powell, Tristan Thompson, Kem Birch, Brandon Clark. Like, maybe Chris Boucher was looking at that and be like, hey, man, you know, I'm cool.
He's like, I'm good. I was already third string with Nick Nurse last year. I don't need to do this again. Yeah, that's fair.
What stood out to you?
You know, I obviously the talent is very good. I think the fit is going to be a little bit of a problem. So a couple of guys were surprised not to make the cut. And I don't know the situation, so I'm not even making any judgments or, you know, whether on Canada basketball side or the player side. But like Kyle Wilcher, for example, has been really, really good. I mean, he's a guy off the bench who can give you like 20 points in a game easily. Like, he had a 33-point game, I think last time. In the tournament, and like whatever, man. The World Cup was really terrible, and like the roster was really bad. It was like a lot of like last second additions. Like I remember, like they brought in a guy, like on the eve of playing, like he flew from Spain to China, which is like a huge time difference and a long flight. And then like the next game, he was playing. It's tough, right?
Hey, shout out Mark going back to back, man.
That was yeah.
I hope that was Mark, the summer of Mark. Like
that was absolutely that the summer was... of Mark, man. That guy was crushing. Oh, yeah. Anyway, because I think he was like training camp was like right afterwards. I don't know, man. But that man came in and just has been putting up like single doubles ever since. Unfortunately, but no. Listen, that's the way to go out. If you win two championships, you can put up single doubles forever. It doesn't really matter, man. I feel like there's a shortage of shooting on this team. Like in terms of like the way I would structure this roster, I think obviously shooting is going to be very important, obviously in all levels of basketball, especially international basketball. There is usually more physicality. There is usually more. It's a lot more difficult to dominate in the paint. So you're going to need a lot of shooting to open it up. Kelly, you know, I really trust that he will be able to deliver. Although he is also a free agent this year, so like, you know, but I Kelly's track record, he's been there all the time with this amount of talent. I think he's going to be there. Kelly would be the starter for me in the front court. I honestly think O'Shea, based on the way he's developed his shot, should really be in consideration here. I don't think he was a guarantee to make this roster in previous months, but the way he finished the season, I mean, the jumper looks really good, the athleticism. I think you need him on the roster. And you know, again, the strength is definitely in their defense. They have a lot of guys who can really guard. They have a lot of size. I trust Tristan Thompson. You know, I think Wiggins has made some steps this year. Corey Joseph,
that trio, very reliable. Right? Wiggins, Dort, and Dylan Brooks. Like, to be able to have those three on the wings defensively, I think is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'll point out is I think Corey Joseph is going to end up being really important.
Yeah. Bro, every single time, just pencil Corey Joseph into the roster, man. He's definitely going to play. Now, maybe if they had Jamal and they had Shea, then it's like, okay, you know, but nah, he's definitely on the roster for sure. He's like maybe the first name on the roster. I'm not going to lie.
And you look at the guards, like he's the only true point guard with experience. Like the only other true point guard really is Andrew Nembhard.
Yeah, which I like, but I mean,
he's very young, right?
He's very young, yeah.
So I think especially, you know, in the FIBA format, understanding the physicality, understanding how the calls can go, like I think Corey is going to be really important for that run.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that the guard position is a little bit shaky in terms of, like, who can get inside and create. But, again, like, I do think that you can offset that with the fact that you have playmakers like Kelly. You have – honestly, Wiggins is a playmaker as well. You know, again, this might sound unsexy in terms of, like, if you're thinking about an NBA sort of framework. But I think as an international framework, like, the expectation was already that they should win the tournament, especially since it's being held in Victoria and they bid a lot of money for it. But, like – I think especially if this turnout actually translates and goes to play, like they should absolutely come out of this tournament. The only team I'm really worried about for me is Turkey.
Mm.
But even with Turkey, like I feel like, you know, going off Turkish teams in the past, a lot of post play, a lot of bigger guys, you know, they have some feisty wings, I guess. Like they have, I guess, Furkan Korkmaz, but he might not even be available to play considering the Sixers probably going to conference finals. So he's out.
Yeah.
Chetty Osman.
You got Raptors killer Ersan Ilyasova.
I mean, he's playing with the Jazz, right? So he might not play.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
So I mean, you know, and to be fair, like most of their talent is in the front court. So I think the Raptors have the Raptors team Canada has the talent.
It's the same
in the front
it's
court.
Same. It's gonna be the same.
It's the same, bro. They're coached by Nick Nurse. It's unbelievable. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I really like this roster, and I think honestly they'll probably bring in a usual group of. International players as well. I think Melvin Ejim is a guy who's going to contribute to this group. I'm surprised Kevin Pangos wasn't on this list, especially with the shortage of guards. I feel like they could have really used Pangos, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I read that he's a free agent. this summer. So yeah, maybe there was, you know, probably wants to get that sorted.
Yeah. If there's one surprise player that's going to make the final 12 out of this list that people might not necessarily think would make that final 12, who would it be for you?
Would people consider Anthony Bennett a surprise?
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think he has a shot.
Yeah.
I think, what was it, the FIBA Americas games that happened a couple months ago?
Yep.
Where he looked pretty good and contributed. So I think he has a shot. Might have a few of those coaches who were involved there in his corner as well.
Yeah.
Probably part of why he made this initial 21 list.
I mean, that'd be an awesome story.
So I think he's a wild card that I'd throw into the mix. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I mean, I wouldn't expect, you know, Andrew Nicholson to make it. I'd be honestly, with the way that his season has gone, Trey Lyles, like not playing, like I'd be surprised if he made it as well. So even though, you know, prototypically, like he's a guy that can stretch the floor and offer you some size, but he just hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, I'm going with Michael Mulder as my pick. I just think that like they need shooting. They need guys who play off ball. There's a lot of guys on this list that play on ball. They need an off ball shooter. And yeah, if they don't reach into the talent pool to get like a Kyle Wilcher or whatever, like I think Michael will probably make the list. And it'd be a great story because again, this guy's really made a name for himself, man. So
yeah. Yeah, no, it'd be interesting if he makes it because if you're picking a roster at 12, you're probably going, what, four guards?
At least, yeah.
And at least four guards. You got Barrett, Joseph, Brooks, Nikhil, Alexander Walker.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the competition. I think probably Nikhil, Michael Mulder, and Andrew Nembhard for that final guard spot. Maybe they take five guards, kind of honestly, because, you know, the way Nick Nurse likes to play, he likes to play with more guards.
That's true.
But, yeah. I mean, so what would the starting five be? Just on paper right now, assuming everyone's available, everyone's good, everyone's healthy.
I'd have Corey at the point.
Yep.
RJ playing the two. Okay. Wiggins playing the three. I think the way size is in FIBA, Dort can play the four.
Dort plays the four. Okay. So no Brooks for you in the starting five.
No.
Wow.
I love him as a spark plug. So. I think him coming off the bench could really, you know, be solid off the bench.
Does RJ's play this year? Does it not worry you just a little bit in the playoffs right now? What are you doing?
But that's kind of why I want him out on the floor with Corey. Like, I don't want him being the lead guy off the bench.
Fair. Okay, cool.
And then Kelly Olynyk at the five because you need that shooting.
Word.
With those other four.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think it would be very flexible and I would – and it's only four games, by the way, to play in tournament. They got to win four games. If they win all four, they're good. They go to the Olympics for the first time in 21 years. But I could also see them starting a little bit bigger as well. Like, I think Kelly could play four. I think, honestly, the way Ken Burch played, both with Team Canada last 2 years ago and with the Raptors this year and his familiarity with Nick Nurse, I could see Kem starting, but it could be also Tristan Thompson starting. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think Wiggins, and honestly for me, I would bring Barrett off the bench and I would put Dylan Brooks in there. I just think he's just showed so much leadership in that role. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. Like, I don't know that there's a wrong choice there.
Yeah.
I think it could go either way.
Yeah. No, it's going to be fun, man. I mean, I'm looking forward to covering this, as I'm sure you are as well. Yeah. And lastly, we've come to this point in the podcast where we got to talk soccer or football, really. So the Euros are coming up 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
Pretty wild. I'm very excited for me. I mean, look, listen, nothing against – obviously, the World Cup is the World Cup. Like, it's nothing comes close to it. But in terms of, like, just pure quality of football, like, I feel like Euros as an international tournament – is still probably the highest for me. And I know that's huge disrespect to lots of teams missing from South America in particular, right? And you know, Uruguay, Colombia, Brazil, Argentina, Chile has been great recently as well. You know, it's huge disrespect. Even Venezuela, you know, some decent talent there. But I just think the Euros, it's hard to find bad teams. Now, of course, this year they expanded the pool. So it is a little bit more watered down, but I mean, it's still like, I don't know, man, this is going to be really fun. I'm really looking forward to the Euros. Let's go group by group. How about that? Obviously six groups and we can pick which two teams within will come out of each group. So let's start with group A, Turkey, Italy, Wales, Switzerland. Honestly, I'm not sure who's the favorite in that group. I mean, you would probably say Italy on paper, but I haven't really been very impressed with Italy in international play for some time now, honestly.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I still think they make it out the group. I think they'll and like I watched, like Italy's played the Netherlands a couple times recently, so and got the better of them. So I still like Italy enough to make it through the group. I think between Turkey and Wales and Switzerland, it's going to be interesting for that second spot. Mm. I'll probably go with Turkey. Just because I feel like with Wales, like Gareth Bale, we never know what his health status is and where he's going to be, obviously.
Yeah. He should be good, though.
But he's not there.
He should be good to play. You would think.
He should be.
Yeah, he was all right this year with Spurs, kind of.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I just feel like Turkey, like when it comes to these tournaments, they just have like a know-how to get it done. And
yeah. They play really well as a group.
Yeah, so I feel like I'll take my chances with them making it out.
All right, wow. Switzerland. I feel like Switzerland gets a lot of hype because I think they have surprising talent, but I don't know, man. It's
but I mean, their best player now is what, Xhaka?
Yeah, or Shaqiri, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they have guys that you recognize maybe more than other teams, but I don't know.
Like Shaqiri, like barely like Mbolo. Oh yeah.
We've lost 90% of our listeners when I asked you if you like Mbolo.
So yeah, I'll take a pass on Switzerland.
Okay.
I'll be wrong.
That's fair. All right, group A, not the most interesting group, to be honest. Group B, Denmark, Finland, Belgium, Russia. Belgium obviously is the class of this group.
Yeah.
Not even close. Belgium has just absurd talent. Really like them as a team. See how far they go. Obviously Lukaku is really he's been amazing this year. Found his form, absolutely. So outside of Belgium, who's coming out of this group?
So it's between Russia and Denmark for me.
Okay.
And I'm gonna go Denmark.
Yeah.
I think they'll be all right. I think, again, I don't think they're a great team or anything, but I think they'll do enough. They have Timo Pukki, and so Eriksen is healthy.
Yeah, we lost the other 10% when we said Timo Pukki. Has he honestly, outside of like the hot like month when they came up, like has he still been good? I honestly feels like he hasn't really been in the spotlight as much.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been good enough.
Yeah,
good enough to get out of this group. Like it's again after Belgium, it's like, you know, who do you really believe in? So yeah, I'll take my chances with Denmark over Russia. Russia had that home court advantage in 2018, so I'm not gonna get too crazy about that.
Yeah, that's fair. To be honest, the Russian teams are they're not that inspiring, quite honestly. I mean, it's not like Denmark is like a world beater, but you got Schmeichel on that. You know, it's not bad. I feel like they'd be disappointed if they didn't come out of this group. Okay, Group C, Netherlands, Ukraine, Australia, North Macedonia. Shout out North Macedonia for making it into this group, man. That's got to be the smallest country in this list. Obviously, you're a Netherlands fan. This is about as good of a draw as you could probably want. I mean, this is very easy to get out of the group. I mean, even with Netherlands sometimes being disappointing, and I'm obviously saying that tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but like, yeah, I mean, you guys will win this group. Who do you see as the biggest threat out of the other three?
I honestly don't know if we win this group.
Bro, come on, man.
Man, ever since Frank DeBoer became the coach.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Yo, play the clip. Look up what Jose Mourinho said about him.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's all-time ethering.
So, yeah, I'll take...
like Austria?
Yeah, maybe Austria.
Yeah. Bro, you guys are going to win this group. If you guys don't win this group, like, it's a real disaster. I understand the concerns about coaching, but like the gulf in talent here is substantial.
That's fair. All right. The Dutch win the group, but Austria will come through. Austria will come through.
Yeah. No, this group sucks. All right. The last three groups are the best ones. Group D, England, Croatia, Scotland, Czech Republic. Is this the year? Is this the year?
For England. I mean,
obviously. We just saw the rosters announced today. It's not bad.
It's a really good squad. I just don't know if I believe in them as much as their performance at the World Cup would suggest.
Okay.
Like, you look at their results overall, it wasn't spectacular, right? Let me just pull it up. Like, who'd they get past?
They definitely
went to extra time. But before that, it was like they beat Sweden, so what? They went to penalties against Colombia. They lost to Belgium. Yeah. They beat Panama. Who cares? So were they really like a semifinal team? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
But they have talent. They have a lot of young talent.
I was going to say, they might have the second most attacking talent in this whole tournament, which is saying a lot, honestly.
Yeah. Talent-wise, like, you look at France, you look at Portugal.
Yeah, Portugal is up there too, but...
And then, yeah, England would be right there. Mm. Is it their year, you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's so hard because I think... It's you're always so biased because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure for you as well, but like, you just watch the Prem more than you watch the other leagues. Like, I definitely watch the Prem more than the other leagues combined. So, yeah. Like, there's a tendency to overrate some of the talent. And of course, like, England obviously has a reputation for disappointing you know, they've obviously had golden generations before. You look at, like, I mean, like, Lampard's goals, Gerrard, you know, like, they've had lots of talent at the same time, Beckham, and they've fallen short, but. I like this group. I like that they've gotten younger. I think they're definitely one of the most athletic groups that you can see here. And my main concern with them is really just like their defense and who's in net. Because I, you know, as we talked before the pod, like, this is, I don't trust any of their keepers at all. Yeah. They're fine, but like, you know, you would preferably like someone who you can really fully trust in mm-hmm. net. And then in defense, like, if Harry Maguire is not fully fit, like, I really do feel like he's a bigger loss for them than maybe his reputation would suggest, because I feel like half of England's goals were just him putting his giant head on a corner or on a set piece.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah, that's the other part of that World Cup, right? It was like so much of it was like set piece or bust.
Oh yeah, I remember reading a story and like somehow like Gareth Southgate went to like watch one of the games that were played, the NBA games that were played in Europe.
Yeah.
And he's like, wow, look at these guys working pick and rolls. Never seen this before. I'm going to try this in soccer. So he was running pick and rolls off the corner. And I was like, all right, man, enough out of you. Just, yeah, fine. You guys are good at set pieces. That's great. That's great. You guys are good guys who cross the ball. And Harry Maguire has a head bigger than everyone except me. But like, you know, you don't have to talk about
how much he plays.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, because if you don't have him, then, you know, you feel a lot less. But, I mean, damn, that attack is really enticing, man. Like, I honestly, they could take any three of those guys out of their attacking group, and, like, they would be lethal to me.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Croatia, do you think that they're second in this group? Like, they should be, honestly. I know the core is getting older.
Like their last hurrah with Modric.
Yeah, it's hard to pick against them. But that's going to be a fun group. I'm really looking forward to that one, to be honest. Because I think even Scotland versus England would be a fantastic match just off the vibes alone.
Mm.
And then Czech Republic, yeah, they have some talent too. Group E, Spain, Sweden, Poland, Slovakia. I mean, Spain. They got to win, but they're also a tad fraudulent at the moment. Can't even lie.
They are. It's crazy. Did you see that stat that this is the first time in their history that they have zero Real Madrid players in their squad?
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, how's that? Wow. Okay, let me look up. I got to pull up the Spanish roster because that seems absurd. I know Madrid wasn't like sensational, but like, come on, man.
No Isco, no Carvajal.
Okay, I guess no Ramos as well. Yeah. By the way, with the expanded rosters, I felt like there was a case maybe Ramos could have played just as like a leader for the club.
More like you just avoid the drama where it's like if he's going to be in the squad, there's going to be that media pressure that he has to like start kind of thing. And it's like it's almost better to just not have him in the squad.
Okay.
That's my theory.
Hmm. That's amazing, though. That's actually incredible.
But yeah, Spain, I mean, yeah, they should win the group. Who do you like better, Sweden or Poland?
That's a fair question to ask. I think I still would probably go with Poland. I think, like, you just look at the form that Lewandowski was in all year. But I don't know, man. This is a very balanced group outside of Spain. And even Spain, like, I know it's Spain and, like, you know, but you look at the roster, it's not as stacked as you would normally expect out of a Spanish roster. Like,
no, it's not. It's not.
Look at their, but even, they should even their midfield. Their midfield looks mad slow, right? I mean, I love Thiago, right? I think he'll probably feature, but, like, Sergio, like, you got Busquets, you got Rodri, Koke, Pedri. Like, these are good names, but, like, together, I feel like it's a little bit uninspiring. Even Fabian Ruiz. And then, I mean, I don't know, man. Who's going to be the striker for them? Like, this team has real issues, man. It's going to be Morata, isn't it?
I mean, Moreno, like, he scored 30 goals for Villarreal this season, so.
Okay. Yeah, this is
tough to leave them out. But yeah, they're not. No one's. I don't think anyone's picking them to actually win it.
No, this is a pretty uninspiring group.
They might just put Adama Traore and bully some people.
Honestly, I wish they would. He's like the only injection of pace they have in this group. Yeah, man. Like, he's just gonna carry the ball up himself, and everyone will be like 40 yards behind. yeah. No, it's tough. Also, who's even in net? Like, it can't be De Gea, right? It's probably going to be De Gea, but, like, as a United
fan. No, I think it's De Gea. I think it's De Gea.
Wow. Where are you with De Gea, by the way, at this point? After, I feel bad for him that he got really shit on for failing at something that it's not even his job. It's not his job to take a penalty kick. Like, it's not. It's not his fault. You know what I mean? But. Where do you stand?
Obviously, I go back to like that game never should have gone to penalties if you're United.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You think about Villarreal finished seventh in La Liga.
Mm-hmm.
United, before the finals, they absolutely dominated Real Sociedad, who finished fifth. They absolutely dominated Granada, who finished ninth. Like, it should not have been that close.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot that went wrong in the first 120 minutes. And then, like, you know, when two teams combine to go 21 for 22 in the shootout. Like, it's just tough. So, De Gea, I think he's been good. Obviously, I don't think he's, you know, what he used to be.
Yeah.
But I still think in terms of the competition between him and Dean Henderson, like, I don't know who the better keeper is. I think Henderson is trusted more.
Okay.
But I think the biggest issue for De Gea now is the fact that he just probably makes too much money. And so you can't validate, like, potentially having Henderson as the number one and then De Gea making, what is it, like, 350K a week
right.
as backup.
So, okay, this is probably the most reasonable take I've heard. Because I feel like people were, I mean, especially after that game, like people were just ready to throw him off the boat. And it's not the first time, obviously. It's not like people are turning out their hair right now, but it's tough.
I don't get that. He was at the club. He's been at the club for 10 years and he's been a legend pretty much until like the World Cup in 2018.
Yeah.
Like that's when things started to go south for him. But like he was United Player of the Year 4 times.
Yeah. My bro, he carried you guys for entire seasons when, you know, the actual outfield players were kind of ass. So
yeah, I accept that, you know, he's probably not the ideal number one option. But I, like, based on what I've seen from Henderson, I don't think he's like a dream number one option either.
So are you guys going to sign a keeper?
I'm being completely
like, is this a situation?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if it were up to me, I'd almost like rather sign like Donnarumma.
Wow.
And make him the number one.
I mean, he's pretty good. He is pretty good.
Yeah. I think he's better than both those guys. And then you just, you know, you probably get rid of De Gea because his wages are too high. But then you've got a problem with Henderson because he won't be happy to be the number two. Yeah. So.
I mean, you know, I almost feel a little bit leery about paying a huge transfer fee for a keeper as well. Just because, like, you got to get it right. Like you don't want a Kepa situation. I'm not saying Donnarumma is like a Kepa kind of situation. I think he's more
accomplished. But I think Donnarumma's contract is up.
If I'm not mistaken. Oh, word. Okay. Well, in that case, then, yeah.
Yeah.
Group F. Hungary, Portugal, France, Germany. This is the group of death in this entire tournament. Because Portugal, France, and Germany should all absolutely be going into the next round and not just, you know, potentially getting out in the group stage. I think third places are going to play each other. There's going to be a way all three teams advance. But I just feel bad for Hungary as the fourth team in this group. These three teams are very, very good. Obviously, I think France is the best team probably in the world. Obviously, they won the World Cup. But like they're just as talented as, if not more talented than before. I think you see what Mbappe's been doing. It's France, like they have great talent. But Portugal and Germany obviously are also great, 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 great franchises. Yeah, I mean, I love how do you pick this group? It feels weird to be like they're great countries. You know what I mean? Like it feels a little weird to just be like, yes, I guess they are also great countries, but
yeah.
Yeah, in any case.
Yeah, Germany, I feel like they'll be so eager to bounce back from mm-hmm. getting knocked out in the first round in the 2018 World Cup. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be really hungry.
Yeah.
But no pun intended.
Okay.
Portugal, talent-wise, like...
Bro.
Look at Cristiano.
Don't sleep on the Portuguese, man. Please do not sleep on them.
Yeah. Defensively, like they've got a lot.
You even mentioned Diogo Jota.
Exactly.
The best sub in the Premier League.
So I think that is gonna be a tough team to beat. Man, honestly, right. France is probably gonna win the group, but in terms of who finishes second, it's like impossible. Like that basically is gonna be that game between Germany and Portugal. And who knows, maybe they just draw that game and then it comes down to goal difference against Hungary.
Yeah, I was going to say, Hungary might finish the tournament with like Aaron Baines plus minus. it might be like a minus 20. Like, well, it's not going to be minus 20, but it'll be bad. No.
So between Portugal and Germany, who do you like better to win the tournament?
I don't like Germany's like strike options as striker. And like whatever, man. They have like an absurd midfield. Like it's really hilarious looking at this list right now, man. But I just don't feel like they have that like the number nine who you can funnel everything towards and like having them score. Like obviously, like that's the thing with Portugal is like even if the depth of the roster isn't as great, like the way Ronaldo can play at an international tournament, we see him just carry teams, like just carry Portugal through. I mean, like they literally won the Euros last time, right? So
But he doesn't even have to do that anymore. Like,
that's, yeah, I know.
You got Ruben Diaz in the back. You got Bruno to support. You got João Felix.
Yeah. So. No, this is honestly, like, I like Portugal a lot. Like, I really wish they weren't in this group. Yeah, this is tough. Yeah, no, this is going to be like, yeah, again, this is going to be a killer. I mean,
we're going to have to do React pause just for this.
We might have to, man, honestly. It's but the thing is, like, you know, even France, like, as a French, like, supporter, like, it makes you worry because, again, like, you just have one strange result and somehow you might have to be fighting for your life. It might be like a Lakers in the having to play the play-in tournament kind of situation.
That's the problem.
You know what I mean? And it's like, it's football. Like, you know, you can lose a random 1-0, or like you can.
Shout out Benzema finally being back.
Yo, salute Benzema being back, man. Finally. I mean, to be honest, like, whatever. France is always spoiled for talent. Like, you could probably put together the B team for France and, like, they'll probably come in like fourth. But yeah, no, man. Definitely the swaggiest player of the, maybe in all of football, man. When you got like highlight videos of just you living like your lifestyle off the pitch, not even just like highlights on the pitch, just like highlight. I keep seeing highlight videos of just like Benzema the way he lives, and like him stepping out of planes, and like him in the, you know, Mediterranean. I'm sure like most players live like this, but damn, really an incredible flex. But yeah, I don't know, man. So okay, who's your pick to who's give me your 1-2-3 in this tournament? I obviously I'm picking France to win, but I'm curious to see where you're going in terms of the second and third best teams in Europe.
Yeah, so favorites to win, I would say France number one.
Yeah.
Portugal, I think, are two.
Oh, two. Okay.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about this group, man. Like,
bro, this could be just 1-2-3. Like, Germany could very well be the third best team in this tournament.
Let's see. Number three is interesting.
Yeah,
I will
say England. I know you want to.
No, I definitely don't want.
Wow.
You know what? I'm gonna say, if KDB is healthy, I'm gonna say Belgium.
I mean, I see that. Yeah. They do have an absurd amount of talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lukaku's playing amazing. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this team.
Because then, like, you could kind of, like, you could maybe put England above Italy, but then are they necessarily above Croatia? Like, we'd have to see that play out.
Yeah.
Spain, maybe. So, like, all those other teams are the maybes, but I feel like France, Portugal, and Belgium probably have like the biggest expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Belgium's a good call too, just because I think that they'll have no problems going out the group and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? What's your big three?
I got France number one. I mean, that's not even a bias. Like, France, like, it's ridiculous. Like, they've, look at the midfield, look at their striking options. They got Mbappe, they got Kante, they got.
All Kante does is win, man. The dude is.
Exactly.
Year after year.
No, that talent is, it's just too stacked. Just Paris alone could probably win the World Cup. Number two for me, I honestly like this Belgium side as well. I want to see them go far. Like, you just look at their attacking options. You got Hazard, Mertens, Lukaku. Like, that's dangerous. They got a lot of pace in this team as well. I could see them finishing second. And honestly, I'm starting to buy into the England hype just a little bit, just because I really do feel like it's going to be very, very hard stopping them from scoring. Like, I understand. I know they're not the most defensively sound group, but man, the attacking options going forward, like, even just going from like the options, the depth of options they have at wingback, even in the attacking midfielders that they have. And then again, the front three is going to be, you know, just crazy. So. It's good. I'll say England comes thirds. It's not going to happen, but I would love to see the reaction, honestly. I like seeing these like huge fan bases coming with expectations. Like, you know, like, it's like the Leafs with like the Knicks, for example.
That's true. Oh, man, the Leafs.
Oh, bro. That's tough. I really wanted to hop on the bandwagon this year. I really, really wanted to, but what can you really do, man? Like, I don't know. How much hockey do you watch?
None whatsoever. My roommate was watching Game 7. So I watched that for a little bit with him, but damn. That was about it, man. That was the most hockey I've watched maybe since Crosby scored that golden goal.
Yeah. No, but it actually has been really, like, I feel bad because I do have obviously a lot of friends who are Leafs fans. So I really do feel bad for them. But, like,
yeah,
it's actually hilarious the way they've lost in the first round 8 times now in a row. They've blown multiple 3-1 leads, this time to a team that was supposed to be much worse than the Leafs. It's actually unbelievable. Like, we might just have to, like, salt the earth and just let everything go. Like, we might have to move the Leafs to, like, you know, honestly, they should be playing a downs view for the foreseeable future.
This is where I'm like, don't compare these Leafs to the Kyle and DeMar Raptors. They got out the round plenty of times. They went to the conference finals. Don't compare Mitch Marner, who scored 0 goals in a playoff game, to DeMar.
Why, like, every single time the camera panned to him on like the bench or whatever, or the penalty box, this guy was always like on the verge of breaking down. Like, I feel bad for them. Like, I really do. Obviously, sports is very emotional, and like, but like, that doesn't inspire confidence, man.
Nope.
So that's tough. I feel really bad for Leafs fans. My dad's a Leafs fan. I called him last night to check if he was okay. He was like, you know, this is what it is. He's not that emotionally invested, but he has still watched them consistently for like 10 years. And yeah, man, since I've come to Canada, like, actually, my brother's like 19. He's turning 19 in August. Like, he's literally he's seen one playoff series win in his life. And he didn't even see it. He was like a year old when it happened. So this is tough, man.
That's rough. Yeah. But hey, that's why we have the Raptors.
Yeah, the Raptors really played the whole freaking year in Tampa, finished 18 games under 500, and we might feel the best about them out of any team. Maybe the Jays. I don't know. They're a little bit, you know, they've had injuries and they're playing in Tampa themselves, but like, or they're playing in Florida themselves, but
yeah.
It's tough, man. Are we back to the dark days of sports in Toronto? Like, is this what we're left with?
Oh, man. I hope not.
Yeah, like, I wasn't like a huge fan of other sports, but I did support the Toronto teams because I'm from here. But like, I remember just like looking forward to April every year because I was like, okay, there's a chance where all three teams, you know, might play on the same day and they might win on the same day. And I think it hasn't happened in like a decade at least. And there's only like a month of crossover every year, but yeah. And now even TFC is not good. It's tough, man.
Yeah, that situation with the manager is interesting. Armas is an interesting dude.
Hey, so what's going on with TFC? Let me fill me in with I'm not gonna lie, I'm too snobby to watch MLS, but I would like TFC to do well.
I mean, so am I.
All right, fair. That's fair.
But yeah, my buddy Michael Singh, who covers the team. I kind of just read his updates from time to time. So seems like they have some formation issues, and Armas seems like he's trying to galaxy brain the media into like what he's doing. And he's like comparing himself to Pep.
Okay. Word. All right. We've gone too far, man. TFC is 12th in the table. That's not good in the East.
No,
that is not good. Wow. 1 win, 2 draws, 4 losses. Yikes. That's not great, man. Anyway.
But yeah. I can't. It seems like right now he's trying to just pick who he thinks are the best players to play regardless of position, and just he feels like they'll figure it out as opposed to just playing the best fit. And then when he was asked about it, he was like, "Well, Pep plays all midfielders and it works for him."
Yeah, that's tough. That is a tough thing to say, man. They have 5 points. There's no relegation, but that's where they would be. They'd be in the relegation zone right now. What's going on, man? Damn. Oh God. Yeah. This is the thing with Toronto. Is like, if you are a sports fan, like, you really just gotta like cherish the small bits of happiness, and it's all come from the Raptors. So That's why we have this podcast. So, well, V, I've held you long enough, man. We've talked about every sport in existence. You want to touch on the French Open? No, I'm kidding, but yeah.
There's no Canadians left. I mean, Leila Fernandez is the only Canadian left in the singles.
What happened with Bianca this year that just hasn't really – what's going on? Like, I felt like she hasn't – I haven't heard her name as much.
Well, she didn't have the ideal prep for the clay season because initially she got to the final of the Miami Open, which is a hard court tournament. Mm-hmm. And then she got injured in that final. She like messed up her ankle. And then she was out and then she was ready to come back and she was supposed to play a couple tournaments, but when flying to, if I remember correctly, it was Rome. After she got there, she had an inconclusive test.
Oh, right. I saw that. Yeah. That's tough.
And so by the time she was good to go, like she couldn't play the tournament. And so she played like two matches before the French Open. And then, yeah, she didn't play great. She didn't play well. She probably should have won that even based off like the couple matches she played leading up to it. Cause like she looked good there, but she just didn't show up for this first round match.
That's tough. Who you got winning it? Both sides.
Women's, I'm going to pick Iga Świątek. I mean, she's a defending champ and she looks incredible. Like in the lead up to this, she won another tournament like 6-1, 6-love in the final.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Was like another top 10 player in the world. It wasn't like she'd beat a nobody. I'm gonna pick her as the favorite to win on the women's side, and then the men's side it's just automatic, man. It's Nadal until he dies on clay, bro.
Yeah, I don't even know why I asked, to be honest. Honestly. Yeah. No, it's actually been really incredible watching all these athletes like continue to be like incredible for so long. Like it's the prime for every athlete now is like way longer than you would ever think. As compared to before.
Yeah.
And the thing is like it's not like Nadal's that old. He's 34. He just started playing early and started dominating really early, but like
Yeah,
it's
No, Kyle gave you a good answer about that in terms of just like the work that he puts in.
He did. Yeah.
Like there's just that belief, right? Now that as long as you put in the work and you respect you know, the science, the sports science, and you just follow, you know, a good diet and good exercise routines, like you can extend your prime. And you think about before where athletes would have been like, okay, I got only an extremely finite amount of time to make my money. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, they have a greater opportunity. So why not?
Yeah, no, I think the technology aspect of it is just like, it's incredible. Like the advances in like dieting, for a lot of these athletes, kind of therapy that they're able to get now. Like, wasn't there a story that came out a couple years ago where Kyle like has like, it was like LeBron definitely had like a hyperbaric chamber like in this van that he traveled with or something like that. Like, bro, what are we talking about, man? You're telling me LeBron just like goes like he finishes the game and then he just hops into his like a Batmobile essentially, and he's preserving his body for the next like 48 hours until he has to play again. That's insane. Yeah.
You know? The man spends seven figures on his body alone.
Yeah. And it's definitely worth it, man. So,
I mean, yeah.
It's tough. That's tough. I probably spent $7 on my body. So, you know, it's relatively proportionate, I guess.
I just want to go outside.
Yo, I just want to go outside. That's seriously. All I want to do is kick a soccer ball around with like maybe five other people on my side. I want to play five aside, maybe seven aside. You know, that's about it. And a little bit of basketball, just about my own. And that's it. And get a haircut. That's it. That's all I'm asking for. If we can do that safely as a province, I would very much like that. But unfortunately, it's still tough for us. Okay. All right. V, thanks for coming on the pod, as always. You've been doing a lot recently, man. Let people know what you've been doing.
Oh, usual stuff. CBC Sports, Complex Canada. I will mention leading up to the Canada Olympic qualifiers, I will have a feature coming out on Melvin Edgem. So you can look up for that.
Nice.
And besides that, you can follow me on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob. We'll still have the Red Couch Manx soccer podcast going. We'll do some off-season content. We'll talk about the Euros. We'll review players and whatnot. So if you're a United fan, if you're a soccer fan, you can check that out. And Will, shout out to you, man, because
what's going on?
We tried to recap every single match, and obviously you were a guest.
Oh yeah,
but like, I've always respected the fact that you've been able to do the Raptors recap, the Raptors reaction for every game. Mm. But to actually experience it myself, to do the United game and recap it after every single match, is a mission and a half, man.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've been doing it season after season after season is incredible.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe a little bit easier with basketball, I think, just because the time zone is a little bit more amicable. Like, what else are you really doing at like 11 p.m.? Whereas, like, I mean, the commitment to watching all the United games, they'll play at like fucking 7 a.m. They'll play at like, you know what I mean? Just the time zone difference. Like, that's a little harder. It's like in the middle of your day and it just disrupts your day. But no, it's a big investment, man. But you guys do a great job, honestly. Like, I'm not even, I don't even like United, but I'll listen to you guys. Like, just because, you know, you guys know footy. So. All right, well, that does it for the podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. I'll be back later this week with probably a Twitter mailbag, quite honestly, because there's not a lot going on basketball wise at least for the Raptors. But V, I appreciate you for coming on as always, and check back later this week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.